Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri, inviting you to discover what research, projects and events are taking place at the University of Malta. I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio today for University Matters on Campus FM, Charlene Bella. Just a short bio note about my guest. Ms. Bella holds an MA with distinction from the University of Malta. She's currently a PhD candidate at the University of Warwick, having won a full scholarship, carrying out research on Antonello da Messina and his Sicilian school, and on the Palermo workshop of the Gagini family under the tutelage of Dr. Don Cooper. Ms. Bella also studied at the University of Verona and the British School at Rome, and she's attended several seminars abroad on scholarship, including a conference on La Civiltà Comunale Italiana, organized by the Scuola di Alti Studi Dottorali of the Università di Firenze, and others, such as the New Directions in Renaissance Conference, which was held in November 2012 at the University of Edinburgh. And there she read a paper on the Renaissance in the South. Ms. Bella has published articles and papers on medieval art and is art critic and reviewer on art books to the Sunday Times of Malta. She served on the executive committee of the Malta Historical Society and served also as editor of Proceedings of History 2009. Welcome to you, Charlene.
Thank you.
Right, so I think the best thing to do really before going into the detail about these paintings which we're going to discuss, which were ascribed to Antonello da Saliba, perhaps we'll try and put him in a bit of a historical and even perhaps geographical context. We're talking about the end of the 15th century in Sicily and Calabria, where both the church and the nobility were, one presumes, commissioning artwork. So perhaps you could pick up on that story.
Yes, of course. Well, if I'd love to imagine what it must have been like to live in Sicily, in eastern Sicily, especially in the 15th century. Well, to think that Sicily and Calabria were part of the Kingdom of Naples, you have the patronage of Alphonse V of Aragon, which was immense. He had some of the greatest Renaissance artists working for him, including Pisanello, who we know is from the north of Italy. And obviously, this patronage meant that in the court of Alphonse V were a host of paintings, sculptures from all over Europe, from different courts in Europe as well. And he was very much envied by other courts, by other kingdoms. Well, this is a time when Malta, Sicily and Calabria were part of the confederation of the Aragonese crown. In fact, it's Alphonse V of Aragon we are discussing. And this meant that there was a wealthy atmosphere in Sicily, and artworks were being commissioned. And it wasn't a mediocre type of work, but and it was an informed patronage as well, by far. And this patronage also reaches little towns in Sicily, and it also reaches Malta, as we know.
And the people who were actually commissioning these works were churches, one presumes, the institutions that had the financial backing to be able to do that. And one presumes that the works found their way to these small places in Sicily because there were people who actually had the money to pay for them.
Yes, in fact, eastern Sicily, especially cities that had a port, Messina, were very wealthy. And people formed their own confraternities as well. And they were great patrons of the arts. These artists, the Antonello da Messina school artists, were benefited greatly from the confraternities. And these confraternities were several, even in one town.
All in competition with each
exactly.
other.
Exactly. And they were commissioning works of art from the same artist, even making sure that our Gonfalone has to be better than that specific one there.
Yes, well, human nature doesn't change, does
exactly,
it, really?
Exactly.
We're going to talk about Antonello da Saliba in particular, because we're going to be discussing two paintings which are being actually restored as we speak. Who was Antonello da Saliva, and how does he fit in the firmament of sort of artists at that time, the kind of setup that you've just been describing?
Antonello da Saliva was lucky because his father, who was a carpenter, was married to Antonello da Messina's sister, whose name has not come down to us, unfortunately. He is lucky because his father entrusts Antonello da Messina's son, whose name was Jacobello, to train him in the art of painting. This was when Antonello da Saliva was only 13 or 14 years old. And it happens to be also the same time where Antonello da Messina passes away. This means that Jacobello, Antonello's son, inherited all of Antonello's artistic everything, drawings. And he is trained in this atmosphere. And Antonello da Messina was a great Renaissance artist. He is mentioned in Venice. Several diaries of the time mention this Antonello da Messina, this genius of art, who is from Sicily, comes to Venice. And Giovanni Bellini, who's the greatest early Renaissance painter, also takes a lot from Antonello himself. And Jacobello d'Antonio, who is Antonello's son, disappears from Messini's documents when Antonio da Saliva becomes his student, pupil. And it is presumed, this is even I believe so, that he travels to Venice, probably because of better prospects. The plague was raging in Sicily as well. With a lot of trade comes wealth, but also this kind of disease moves very, very quickly. So I presume that they settle in Venice. Jacobello again disappears in Venice. But then Antonello da Saliva and his brother Pietro da Saliva appear in Venice, not in documents. I haven't been able to find anything in Venetian documents, archives, but we have paintings that I am sure were painted in Venice that are not in Venice anymore, but also other paintings that are still in Venice.
Why would you say that the paintings are his?
Some have a signature, luckily. That is very, very
but not
helpful.
Very common at that time.
No, and not all of these paintings carry a signature. But there are certain traits that, if you're studying these artists, you will start to recognize. And what is also very interesting is, yes, Antonello da Saliva was trained in the manner of Antonello da Messina, but when he is in Venice, he doesn't close himself to just, he doesn't limit himself to only Antonello da Messina's art. In fact, there are very, very close similarities to the art of Giovanni Bellini. And Bellini, we know, had a great workshop. It was a business. There are hundreds of paintings signed by Giovanni Bellini as well, but which we know were produced by his assistants and then signed by him. The quality varies in his works. And there is a very close connection with the da Saliva brothers and Giovanni Bellini.
So you think that they were helping in the studio of Bellini?
Unfortunately, there is no evidence, but I have made evidence by studying paintings by Bellini and the da Saliva brothers, and the similarity is so great that, yes, I believe that there is a connection, a very strong possibility that they were part of the Bellini workshop at some point.
Because this is something that one's rather more romantic idea of Renaissance painting doesn't accept very gladly, the idea that this was a business, really. And they had these studios, I imagine, where they were, I won't say churning out, but they were producing quite a lot of
I would say paintings. Churning out, because there are so many Madonna and Child paintings, for example, by Bellini, that varies almost just slightly, that yes, I believe they were churning them out. And what is interesting, talking about these bottegas, these large workshops, is that Antonello da Saliva's father, Giovanni da Saliva, was a carpenter. Now, these are artists who worked on panel and whose paintings were generally in an ornate Gothic type frame, which also required a lot of gilding, which a carpenter would have normally done. So again, father and son collaborate together. This we know from documents. So it is sometimes mentioned, sometimes not. But again, you are keeping it all in the family.
Sort of artistic symbiosis, really.
Exactly.
In fact, in some of the articles I read, there was this perhaps criticism of Antonello da Saliva that even he produced a lot of the same sort of thing. But I suppose that fits into the keeping up with the Joneses kind of idea, that if you have a beautiful Madonna and Child on your wall, I want one just like it and possibly slightly different and possibly better.
Definitely true, yes. If this was an age where to assure quality, you would go to that artist that you saw a painting by, and it is even mentioned in documents that the patron wanted the quality to be similar or better than another, as we mentioned earlier. But yes, to be able to provide a certain amount of quality was a desideratum. That is what made a bottega successful as well, an artist successful.
What about the father? Going back to the father just for a moment, Giovanni. You said he was a carpenter, rather sophisticated carpenter, probably. It is said that he may have had Maltese connections. I mean, how far have you managed to get with that idea?
Well, yes, it is presumed by some art historians that Giovanni was Maltese. We have no evidence for that. However, Salibas are generally Maltese. There aren't Sicilian Salibas that I have managed to trace, or Professor Wettinger in his own research on 15th century Malta and Sicily. What is interesting, however, is that there is a mention of a nun, a Suor Elisabetta de Saliba, who lives at the same time as Giovanni de Saliba in Malta. She is a Benedictine nun in Imdina. And from this nunnery, the Saliba brothers receive a commission for a polyptic. So I am very tempted to say that, yes, there is a very close Maltese connection with these de Saliba brothers. Giovanni de Saliba was in Malta himself as well, at some point receiving a commission. But the de Saliba brothers are never recorded here.
So their works would all have been done in Italy or Sicily, and then if anything's here, it's because it was brought in.
Exactly. The Maltese works were probably made in a studio in Messina and shipped to Malta. It was easier to ship things than transport them on land.
Before we turn to Malta, really, and to these particular paintings, just another word, perhaps, about this connection between Sicily and Venice. Why not Sicily and Florence? They seem to have bypassed Tuscany and sort of gone the other route, the Adriatic route up to Venice. Why do you think that was?
Well, I believe that the De Saliba brothers and Jacobello, Antonello's son, went to Venice because Antonello himself paved the way for that. Because in 1475, Antonello da Messina was invited to Venice to produce one of his largest commissions, the San Cassiano altarpiece, which is today, well, parts of which are today in Vienna because it doesn't survive as a whole. And this painting by a patron called Pietro Bon was so, even while it was still being produced, it had already achieved fame. So Antonello da Messina was this great magical figure in Venice. And I believe that the presence of the De Saliba brothers in Venice was due to Antonello's success there. They bypassed Florence. Yes, that is a big question mark to me, because we know of other Sicilian artists, sculptors, the Gagini family, for example, who did go to Florence. One of the Gagini sculptors worked even with Michelangelo. So there is that Florentine connection there. But the painters of the da Messina school seem to ignore Florence completely.
Once they had this big intro to Venice, probably they found it easier.
Much easier, definitely.
And they would have gone presumably by sea, because as you were saying before, overland was much more dangerous. And they would have gone the Adriatic route.
Possibly.
And therefore bypassed perhaps the western side of Italy.
Precisely, yes.
That's really fascinating. With me today for University Matters on Campus FM is Miss Charlene Bella. She's come to talk to us about some early Renaissance paintings in Malta. So let's turn to these two paintings that are they both from Rabat?
They are both from the Church of Santa Maria di Gesù, which we call Ta Gesù, the Franciscan Observance Church in Rabat, yes. We spoke about patronage and who were the patrons of these artists in Sicily. The mendicant orders were great patrons of the arts as well. In fact, in Malta, we have these two paintings that formed part of a polyptych that was commissioned directly to Antonio de Saliba, and which he completed in the year 1515.
A polyptych being a painting with different panels which have a connection with each other.
Exactly. What survives is the central panel, which has a Madonna and Child enthroned with four angels. Two of the angels are crowning the Madonna. And the other painting that survives was on top of the Madonna and Child painting. We know because we have a description of it in the 18th century. And this, the other painting is a lamentation of Christ, when Christ has just been taken down from the cross, and there's the Magdalene and the Virgin mourning his death.
In fact, we have a picture here, so we have an advantage over our listeners. But as you say, perhaps we could sort of describe it. It's a very striking picture, isn't it?
It is, yes. And because it is the elongation of the figure, of the nude figure of Christ, and the mourning, the sorrow that can be felt, even in the gestures and the features of the four figures surrounding him.
I'm seeing
striking.
This figure here has her arm across her face. Am I seeing correctly?
Yes, she does. She does there. And there's the Magdalene who's holding Christ's feet. And St. John the Evangelist opening his hands in sorrow.
It is a very, very striking painting.
And these are only two of at least 11 or more paintings. So there would have been two panels on either side of the Madonna and Child enthroned, and two panels on either side of the Lamentation for Christ, as well as a predella underneath. The predella would have been a long and narrow painting with generally the figure of Christ in the middle, the blessing Christ, Pantacrator, and the apostles on either side of him.
So the other paintings have not survived at all?
Have not survived. Probably when the church, the medieval church was demolished and the present Baroque church was constructed, it was felt that a new altarpiece was needed, because this was the main altarpiece of Tajiz, which was commissioned only a few years after the medieval church was built. So what I think is that when the Baroque church was built, they opted for a more Baroque, more modern altarpiece for their new church. Two paintings survive. I don't know why. Obviously, these are the two main panels from the Polyptych by Antonello de Saliba that survive. Thankfully, at least we have two of them.
Yes, at least that.
That survive.
Perhaps there are others tucked away in some church cellars somewhere.
I am hoping so, yes.
That's always the hope, isn't it? And in fact, this is another point that I think is important to make, that there were these fantastic artworks here in Malta before the Knights, because somehow the coming of the Knights in 1530, when they brought their artisans and they brought their painters, many of them Tuscan painters in actual fact, it's sort of, we seem to think of the Knights as being the be-all and end-all when it comes to sort of artistic development in Malta. But of course, these two pictures prove that that's not true.
These and others, yes, prove that Malta was no artistic desert. It also proves that the Baroque has overshadowed everything else in Malta, because there's a lot that is medieval and Renaissance. If you are willing to look out for it in Malta, even in Mdina itself, behind the Baroque facades of some Mdina houses, palazzi, there is a medieval interior.
Right. So let's talk about these paintings. These paintings have been singled out for restoration.
They have, yes. Thanks to the collaboration of the Franciscan observance, of course. We have removed the two paintings from the church. They haven't been removed in at least 100 years from their location. This was in end of July this year. They are currently in a laboratory, and they have undergone some diagnostic tests, and they are in the process of being restored. Now, these diagnostic tests help me, as an art historian who is studying these artists, to understand better the techniques and the practices of the workshop of Antonello de Saliba. And also it helps the restorer to understand better what they are working with, because a part of these diagnostic tests are infrared, ultraviolet and X-ray photography. These help us understand how the layers of pigment were placed, how many layers of pigment there are, and how the panel was brought together. And this helps the restorer understand how deep he should go when it comes to cleaning. Of course, a cleaning test, a test patch always helps. And we have found that there were some areas that were completely repainted. One of the angels, for example, in the Madonna and Child painting.
When did that happen?
It is difficult to say, because when the pigment layers, when oil is used on oil paint, they tend to merge together quite a bit. But there are overpaintings. Now, these are paintings that are 500 years old. They're actually 498 years old. But when there's an object of cult, this was the main altarpiece. Imagine a medieval church also lit only by candles, and the effect that that would have had on a painting like this. There would have been paint layers that were added to renovate the painting. What used to happen before wasn't restoration as we know it today. What we are trying to do today is remove these excess layers to reach down as far as possible to the original layer.
And has that been possible in this case, or are they still at the initial stages of the diagnostic?
The test patches indicate that we will be getting very close to the original. We have worked on another Renaissance painting, probably by Antonello da Saliba as well, which is now in the Parish Museum of Zeytun. And this was completely repainted by a knight, Fra Villa Vicencio, who was a Baroque artist, of course, who leaves a signature on the painting in 1674, very cheeky. And we have managed to bring back the Renaissance original, because this knight had altered the facial type of the Madonna. He stuck to the main composition, but took a lot of liberties, let's say. It seems like these two Tajizu paintings have been repainted, but not as heavily as the Zeytun painting. And I am really curious now to find out whether, because we also took some paint samples, the stratigraphy of the paint layers comes out in this. And in the Zeytun painting, we had found that there was crushed glass included with the oil paint. This would have helped in the drying process, because oil paint takes a while to dry. And that would have helped in the drying process and speeding up the drying process, and also for luminescence. And I am curious to see whether these paintings have used the same technique.
The one at Zeytun, from the emotional point of view, it must be rather difficult decision, perhaps, to actually take off the layer that was painted by the knight, because that's the painting that people are used to seeing. So it must have been a bit of a shock, however beautiful the original might have been. It must be quite a shock for the owners, let's say, or the people who view the painting, to actually accept the new Madonna.
Definitely, it was actually a difficult decision to make, and we did keep some things that were by Villa Vicencio, including his signature, because that is part of its history as well now. But yes, we have a full-scale copy of the image, which is in the place of where the image usually is, and the painting is now a museum piece.
So this is the interesting new approach to restoration that's been taken on these last 20 years, perhaps, where you have to sort of show what you've done, really, rather than look as though it's all original. And the painting itself has a narrative, I suppose.
And make sure that everything is reversible as well. You have to be very careful. This is why the diagnostic tests are so important, and they were quite an expensive part of the process. Because once you take away a layer, there's no bringing it back.
No. Well, excavation, as any archaeologist knows, is destructive by its very nature. Talking of expense, I think we ought to also say how you've managed to actually afford to do this kind of very expensive diagnostics.
Yes, of course. This project is part of the research program for the study of late medieval and Renaissance art of the University of Malta, but also Banif Bank has been of great help with the expense. We also have insurers. Atlas Insurance has helped. Obviously, these paintings need to be transported. There's a risk there involved, so we have them to thank as well.
Yes, that's always something that I think of when you hear about great paintings being lent to museums abroad and that kind of thing. The idea of what the insurance bill must be always sort of strikes me as being quite sort of horrific, really.
Yeah, thankfully, I don't have to worry about the expense of that as well.
No, jolly good. So how far have we got with both paintings so far?
The last I've seen them, the test patches were larger than the small few centimeter scales, and the go-ahead was given to at least continue on the first layer of cleaning on the entire two paintings.
And we do have the expertise here in Malta now to be able to do this kind of diagnostics.
We do, yes.
And restoration.
We do, yes. Some elements are taken abroad. The paint samples are sent abroad, but the rest is done here, the infrared, ultraviolet.
It's wonderful that we can actually have our own experts in the area now.
And these are things that are done in every museum all around the world, because this helps us better understand not only how a particular artist worked, but how the painting techniques evolved from Renaissance to Baroque, for example. The use of canvas as opposed to panel. These artists paint on panel. Only a couple of decades later, Titian in Venice starts using canvas. So that is the new method, the new technique then.
Yes, well, he was a real innovator, wasn't he?
He was, yes, a genius, I would say.
What kind of wood? I'm curious to know what kind of wood they use for the panels.
That is one of the things that we've had tested. I don't have the result yet, but they like to use poplar, even pine, oak. Depends. It depends on the type of painting, where they are. Even there in Venice, they're using one type of wood, lime wood. The Zaytoun painting is on lime. Actually, I have no idea. I would love to find that out as well.
Yes, but I mean, obviously, since they're not coming from Malta, they would have had a choice. I know that there are wonderful deciduous forests in Sicily, actually, hardwood forests in the north behind Palermo, where they could have got very nice wood. And they would have chosen a wood that would not be susceptible to woodworm, one hopes.
Well, these had woodworm, unfortunately. They did suffer quite a bit, but they are being treated as well for that.
What about your own projects in the last minute that we've got to have our chat?
My major project is my PhD. Obviously, I am writing away at the moment. And I have a book that is being published.
Tell us about that.
Yes, it's my master's dissertation, which is a University of Malta master's dissertation. And it's about, again, Malta before the arrival of the Knights. That analyzes how Malta was at the center of a Western Latin Europe and the Muslim North Africa, and how Maltese art and architecture between the 1091 and 1530 was affected by all of this. So painting, sculpture, architecture, Byzantine, Muslim, Norman, Swabian, Aragonese, Angevin, everything I have tried to put in that one book.
Great stuff. Thank you very, very much, Charlene Vella,
for coming
to talk to us on University Matters on Campus FM about these two fantastic paintings of Antonello da Saliba. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to University Matters on Campus FM. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.